This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. The death toll from a Russian missile strike in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro rose to 40 on Monday, with dozens more missing, making it the deadliest civilian incident of Moscow's three-month campaign of firing missiles at cities far from the front. President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Monday the deadly attack on an apartment building shows the need for faster and better coordinated decisions on supplying arms for Ukraine. German Defense Minister Christine Lambrecht resigned on Monday as her government came under rising pressure to let allies send Ukraine German heavy tanks at the start of what looks like a pivotal week for Western plans to further arm Kyiv. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock called Monday for a special tribunal to prosecute Russian leaders as Moscow faces war crimes accusations over the strike in Ukraine's Dnipro. Baerbock called for a new format of a court to, quote, bring Russian leaders to justice for their invasion of Ukraine, possibly using Ukrainian law but based abroad with international judges. Calls have grown for a way to try to punish Russian leaders for the crime of aggression, as the Hague-based International Criminal Court cannot do so under its rules. More than 90 countries have expressed deep concern at Israel's punitive measures against the Palestinian people, leadership, and civil society following the UN General Assembly's request for an advisory opinion by the UN's highest court on the legality of Israeli policies in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. In a statement released Monday by the Palestinians, the signatories called for reversal of measures. This is VOA News. Supporters of the Zimbabwean opposition party appeared in court for a bail hearing on Monday after they were arrested for unlawful gathering with intent to incite public violence. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelina reports.
Supporters of Zimbabwe's opposition party were seen with their fingers in the air as they marched to court for a bail hearing on Monday. The gesture is a sign of support for their party, Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC. 25 people, including two members of parliament, were arrested over the weekend for an unlawful gathering with intent to incite public violence. The CCC says tear gas was fired on them by police. Opposition supporters have increasingly faced a wave of politically motivated violence against them in rural Zimbabwe. It comes ahead of the presidential election this year, stoking fears of repression.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino. Two appeal court judges in London on Monday ruled a legal challenge can be mounted against the British government's controversial plan to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda. The High Court concluded last month that the proposal introduced to cut record number of migrants crossing the channel in small boats was lawful, but a charity supporting asylum seekers was told it can ask the Court of Appeal to reconsider aspects of the judgment. European royalty gathered in Athens on Monday for the funeral of former King Constantine of Greece, who ruled briefly in the 1960s before Greece voted to abolish the monarchy in 1974. Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo has more.
A second cousin of Britain's King Charles and godfather to their heir, Prince William, Constantine II lived most of his life abroad but returned to his homeland in his latter years. He died at an Athens hospital last week, aged 82. Britain's Princess Anne and Spain's King Felipe and Queen Letizia were among the attendees at the Metropolitan Cathedral in central Athens. Thousands of people had earlier queued for hours to pay their last respects. At 27 years old, Constantine had only been king for 3 years. When he was forced into exile in 1967, he was deeply unpopular for his decision to swear in the military junta, who seized power in April that year.
Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo. China's population shrank last year for the first time in more than six decades, official data showed Tuesday, as the world's most populous nation faces a looming demographic crisis. The country of 1.4 billion has seen birth rates plunge to record lows as its workforce ages, a rapid decline that analysts warn could stymie economic growth. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today's Tuesday, January 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the death toll from Russian strikes in the Dnipro rises as Poland calls for more weapons to Ukraine.
Ukraine's defeat may become a prelude to World War III. Therefore, today, there is no reason to block support for Kiev, to procrastinate.
Development watchdog Oxfam warns extreme poverty has increased for the first time in 25 years.
That equates to $42 trillion, according to Oxfam, nearly twice as much as the bottom 99% of the world's population.
And rescuers retrieve dozens of bodies from ill-fated Nepal plane crash site. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The death toll from a weekend Russian strike on an apartment building in the southeastern Ukrainian city of Dnipro has risen to 40. That makes Saturday's strike one of the world's deadliest single attacks in months. Authorities said a multi-story residential tower housed more than 1,700 people and 30 remain missing on Monday, while 39 survivors have been taken from the building's ruins so far. The Kremlin spokesman said the Russian military does not target residential buildings and suggested that the Dnipro building was hit as a result of Ukrainian air defense actions. Poland's prime minister says there is no need to procrastinate as he urges German government to expand its supply of weapons to Ukraine. Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
At a speech in Berlin, Mateusz Morawiecki calls for decisive actions by Germany.
Ukraine's defeat may become a prelude to World War III. Therefore, today, there is no reason to block support for Kiev, to procrastinate. Thus, I call for decisive actions by German government on all sorts of weapons to be delivered to Ukraine.
He adds he hopes Germany would soon approve a transfer of battle tanks to strengthen Ukrainian defense against Russian forces, adding, helping to repel the Russian invasion of Ukraine is a matter of Europe's survival. I'm Charles de la Desma.
As the United States this week remembers the champion of civil rights, Martin Luther King Jr., President Joe Biden is facing scrutiny into whether he mishandled classified documents. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports on why both Republicans and Democrats agree that the ongoing investigation into the matter is necessary.
A high-profile visit to Atlanta to celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy didn't distract from a newly announced probe by a special counsel into President Joe Biden's handling of classified documents.
Classified material. Next to your Corvette. What were you thinking?
I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon.
Six pages of classified documents were found recently at his private library. Patches were also found at his Wilmington, Delaware home and the Penn Biden Center in Washington. The situation has been compared to the discovery of more than 300 documents, some with top secret markings, at former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. A special counsel has also been appointed to investigate that matter. While pointing out key differences with Trump's case, Democratic Representative Adam Schiff told ABC this week the Biden investigation is appropriate.
I'd like to know what these documents were. I'd like to know what the IC's assessment is, whether there was any risk of exposure and what the harm would be and whether any mitigation needs to be done.
The White House says it will cooperate with the investigators who seek to understand if there was any intent into breaking the law, rather than merely negligence. Also on ABC, Republican Representative Don Bacon highlighted the potential risks of anyone, regardless of party affiliation, mishandling sensitive information.
And having top secret special compartmented information in your garage or your resort or in an area where Chinese nationals have access, it's all wrong. And we shouldn't just be pointing fingers at the other side.
It would be a crime rather than a security violation if President Biden knowingly removed and stored classified documents without authorization. On NBC's Meet the Press, Former U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein explained what to expect of the judicial process, given that a sitting president cannot be indicted.
The special counsel should evaluate the facts and the law, look at Department of Justice policies, and make a recommendation to the Attorney General about whether or not prosecution is warranted. Then it's up to the Attorney General to make the decision whether to apply that DOJ policy.
Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock, who over the weekend stood side by side with President Biden in Georgia, told ABC one thing is certain.
No one is above the law. So I'm glad to see the Justice Department doing its work, and we ought to let that work proceed.
On its side, the Republican-led House Committee on Oversight and Accountability wants the White House to provide a visitor log for President Biden's residence, documents, and communications related to the locations searched. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Veronica. As the annual World Economic Forum gets underway this week in Davos, Switzerland, Oxfam says extreme wealth and extreme poverty has increased simultaneously for the first time in 25 years. The charity is calling for fairer taxation amid soaring global inequality, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
Hundreds of billionaires, dozens of government ministers and central bank governors are due to attend the World Economic Forum in Davos this week, seen as a get-together for the global super-rich. And the charity Oxfam says they are getting richer. That equates to $42 trillion, according to Oxfam, nearly twice as much as the bottom 99% of the world's population. Oxfam says the source of that wealth is partly government money, emergency liquidity pumped into the global economy as the coronavirus pandemic forced countries into lockdown in 2020. Oxfam calculates that at least 1.7 billion workers now live in countries where inflation is outpacing wages, meaning people are getting poorer. However, the wealth of billionaires has surged as inflation drives up food and energy prices. Oxfam is calling for windfall taxes imposed on energy companies to be extended to food companies making big profits. It also wants a tax of up to 5% on the world's multi-millionaires and billionaires. The organisers of the World Economic Forum insist the meeting does benefit everyone. The World Bank warned in October that progress in tackling extreme poverty has ground to a halt amid soaring inflation and slowing economic growth. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The International Labour Organization warns that a current global economic slowdown will force millions of workers to accept lower quality, poorly paid jobs. The ILO has published its World Employment and Social Outlook Trends 2023 report, and Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The outlook for the year ahead and beyond is not very promising. The International Labour Organization reports global unemployment will rise by 3 million for a total of 208 million this year, with similar projections for 2024. ILO Director of Work Quality, Manuela Tomei, says both the quantity and quality of jobs will deteriorate. She says working conditions are expected to worsen while wages go down.
Workers in low and middle income countries are expected to be hardest hit. And with the pandemic and the economic slowdown across the globe, their prospects of seeing a reduction in informality and poverty will deteriorate it further.
The report warns the cost of living crisis will push more people into poverty, widening the gap between rich and poor. It notes about 2 billion people, mainly in developing countries, work in the informal economy. It says the slowing global economy is likely to reverse the progress which has been made since 2004 in moving people out of the informal sector. In addition to the millions of reported unemployed, the ILO says 473 million people last year stopped actively searching for work. It explains they either were discouraged about prospects of finding a job or had other obligations such as care responsibilities. For the first time since the 1970s, Tomei says stagflation conditions, that is, high inflation and low growth combined, are threatening productivity and labor market recovery.
The Ukrainian war, geopolitical tensions, disruption in supply chains, high inflation, the tightening of monetary policies and great uncertainty overall are all contributing to depressing the prospects for labor markets.
The ILO reports young people aged 15 to 24 are facing severe difficulties in finding employment. It says they are three times more likely to be out of a job than adults. It adds young women are faring much worse than young men. It notes only 47.4% of women participated in the global labor force last year, compared with 72.3% for men. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An Indonesian court began trial on Monday of a handful of police and march officials charged with negligence over their alleged roles last year in one of the world's deadliest soccer stadium stampedes. Krista Kilburn of Reuters reports.
135 people died in the October disaster at Kanjuruhan Stadium in Malang, East Java. An investigation by Indonesia's Human Rights Commission found police fired 45 rounds of tear gas into the crowd at the end of the match, causing panic that led to the stampede. Investigators concluded that excessive and indiscriminate use of tear gas was the main cause of the crush, while locked doors, an overcapacity stadium, and failure to implement safety procedures exacerbated the death toll. The disaster prompted widespread questions about safety standards and the use of tear gas, a crowd control measure banned by soccer's global governing body, FIFA. On Monday, the court heard from three police officers, a security official, and a match organizer, who each face a maximum prison sentence of 5 years if convicted. The father of one of the victims attended court on Monday. He says he hopes that they will be punished to the fullest extent, especially those who use tear gas. Indonesian President Joko Widodo announced after the incident that all league matches would be suspended and that Kanjuruhan Stadium would be demolished and rebuilt. League games have since resumed, but without spectators.
That's Christy Kilburn of Reuters. In other news, rescuers battled cloudy weather and poor visibility on Monday as they scoured a river gorge for passengers who were unaccounted for more than 24 hours after the crash in Nepal's worst plane accident for 30 years. Two more bodies were recovered on Monday, taking the death toll to 70, said Navim Achaya, an official at the Rescue Coordinating Center at the Kathmandu airport. The search was called off for the remaining two missing people as darkness descended and will resume on Tuesday. Local media reported that a postmortem of the 24 deceased will be conducted in Pokhara, and the remaining would be flown to the capital Kathmandu. Searchers also found a cockpit voice recorder and flight data recorder of the passenger flight. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Many more violent incidents linked to extremist groups occurred in Benin's north last year than the government has officially acknowledged, a recent report found, as the country has become the new front line in the Sahel conflict. In Netingu, in northern Benin, reporter Henry Wilkins meets witnesses to the attacks.
Violence linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group is spilling over the border from Burkina Faso into northern Benin. Villages are under threat. A resident from a village further north who asked that his identity be protected to avoid reprisals from authorities said he lives in fear. Concerning security in my village, the atmosphere has not been the same for some time. We're all afraid because of what we hear, he told VOA. While terrorists have not yet come to his village, for other residents of the border area, terrorist violence spilling over from Burkina Faso, Niger and Mali is already a fact of life. This man, who also asked that his identity be protected from authorities, says a group of terrorists were passing through his village and sought refuge in a woman's home. When she arrived back from the market and asked them to leave, they killed her. He says that terrorists hit her because she started screaming, because she was scared when she saw their guns. They told her to be quiet and ended up killing her, he added. Analysts say that extremist violence spreading from Burkina Faso into West African coastal states like Benin, Togo, Ghana and Ivory Coast is the next stage in the Sahel conflict. Benin appears to be being singled out, with more militant attacks in the second half of 2022 than other coastal nations, according to data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Asked whether the government has done enough to stop the spread of violence, Arnau Hoenu, a national security expert at Benin's University of Abomey-Calavi, said, I personally think that little has been done, he says. The Beninese authorities may have been guilty of a blind wait-and-see attitude that cannot be explained. He adds that Benin could have imagined that the situation could degenerate and expand to the point of spilling over to the coastal borders, which is unfortunately what is happening. The Beninese government has sent large numbers of troops to the north to shore up security. Analysts say the military response is having an impact, but a recent report by the Klingendael Institute, a Netherlands-based think tank, found many more violent incidents occurred in Benin's north last year than the government has officially acknowledged. In 2022, one European journalist and several Beninese journalists were arrested while attempting to report on terrorism in the north. A consultancy that has been conducting workshops with communities in northern Benin to build resilience to violent extremism says many residents are too scared to talk about the issues. Annelise Bernard is with Strategic Stabilization Advisors, a consultancy.
Many of the comments that we got in the research was everyone and anyone could be a terrorist right now. We have no idea who's who, but we're scared to talk about what we're seeing and what we're concerned about.
Benin's government did not respond to an interview request. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Natitingu, Benin.
Superconductors are substances that allow electricity to pass through them without resistance, helping machines run faster and save energy. But some of the most effective ones work only when they stay super cold. Scientists are hunting for higher temperature superconductors for the practical advances they might bring. For VOA News, Shelley Schlender reports.
Medical machines that scan for disease, superfast trains that float above the tracks. They're possible thanks to superconductors, materials that can carry electric current without resistance. Most superconductors must be supercooled to about 100 times colder than room temperature, which requires rare and costly liquid helium. Joe Eck, a tinkerer in Kansas, wants to find materials that superconduct at room temperature.
If we could achieve room temperature superconductivity, there'd be no cooling required at all.
With room temperature superconductors, electric cars could drive longer without recharging. Computers would be even smaller.
National supercomputer sizes that fill up whole rooms could be put into homes.
Some scientists have reportedly created room temperature superconductors that can work at extreme pressures achieved in a lab. Other scientists dispute the findings, questioning whether the high-pressure superconductors actually operate at all. In his search for warmer superconductors, Eck mixes powders.
Bismuth, scandium, cadmium oxide is dangerous stuff.
He bakes them in his tabletop kiln. At the Los Alamos National Lab, Dean Peterson is familiar with Eck's work. Peterson, a scientist, says room temperature superconductors would be so efficient that the world would have energy to spare.
It would be the golden fleece everybody has been searching for the last 70 years.
In Boulder, Colorado, Danko Vonderlaan is making cables containing rare earth metals that superconduct when cooled by liquid nitrogen to about four times cooler than room temperature.
To have superconductors work at something that's only four times colder than room temperature, it's a huge step.
One pencil-thin superconducting cable packs as much current as a platter-wide bundle of conventional cables. These and other quests to find warmer superconductors may one day lead to electrically powered passenger planes and compact fusion reactors. Shelley Schlender for VOA News, Boulder, Colorado.
This is Science in a Minute.
Black holes, because of their very nature, can remain hidden in space forever. According to NASA, astronomers usually spot them when a star moves close enough to one for some of its material to be captured by the black hole's intense gravity, producing X-rays in the process. Scientists, using 15 years of data from the space agency's Chandra X-ray Observatory and optical data from the ground-based Sloan Digital Sky Survey, have been able to spot hundreds of black holes that, until now, have been hidden in the darkness of space. NASA says the newly unmasked black holes are supermassive-sized that have a mass of millions or even billions of times that of the Sun. Supermassive black holes are found at the center of galaxies. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States continues to support the democratic aspirations of the Venezuelan people and recognizes the 2015 National Assembly as the last democratically elected institution in Venezuela today. At the end of December, the opposition-led 2015 National Assembly voted to end the mandate for the interim government established after the fraudulent presidential election of Nicolas Maduro. Members of the National Assembly have the democratic aspirations of the Venezuelan people at heart. That has been at the heart of our approach as well, State Department spokesperson Ned Price told reporters.
We applaud efforts of the democratic opposition to restore democratic institutions and bring an end to Venezuela's humanitarian crisis, even in the face of the Maduro regime's continued repression. And we'll continue to work with the international community to help address the Venezuelan crisis and to press for free and fair elections in Venezuela consistent with the wishes and desires of the Venezuelan people.
Spokesperson Price noted that while the United States engaged with the Maduro regime regarding U.S. core interests, in particular wrongfully detained Americans, its approach to Nicolas Maduro has not changed. He is not the legitimate leader of Venezuela. We recognize the 2015 National Assembly, he said.
We will continue to enforce our sanctions program against the Maduro regime, as we said before, based upon what we see from the Maduro regime in terms of advancing the prospect for the Venezuelan people achieving their democratic aspirations.
Spokesperson Price called the meetings in November 2022 in Mexico City between the Maduro regime and the opposition Unitary Platform negotiation delegation a positive movement. We, of course, would like to see additional progress, said spokesperson Price, so that the Venezuelan people can realize their democratic aspirations. To that end, the United States will continue to coordinate with the 2015 National Assembly and other like-minded democratic actors in Venezuela to support the Venezuelan people in their aspirations of democracy, rule of law, and prosperity in their country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.